From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Have you been listening to the economic news lately? If your answer is yes, does the inside of your head sound something like this?
You know, these tariffs are starting to cause a real panic among smart money. And there's going to be consequences if he doesn't back down.
And now the EU has threatened to retaliate with tariffs on Harley-Davidson motorcycles, bourbon, and blue jeans. Wow, that is a real blow to America's midlife crisis industry.
It looks like a lot of Americans who cast a vote for President Trump are losing out in this looming trade war with the world.
Well, you are not alone. Even people who took basic econ in college or who read the financial news regularly are swimming in language that boggles the mind, whether we admit it or not. So here at Second Thought, we would like to break it down. With me in the studio for a shame-free explanation of global economics at this moment in time are Christine Reese. She's a professor of economics at Georgia Tech. Hello, Christine.
Good morning.
And Jacobus Bors. He's assistant dean for international engagement at the J. Mac Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University. Hello.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with some basic vocabulary, like words or phrases that we're hearing daily. Christine, I'm going to start with you. What is a tariff?
A tariff is basically a tax, and it's a tax that's put on goods that are imported from abroad. So, in a sense, a tax on the products that foreign producers sell, as opposed to a tax on domestic producers.
So how is it different from a tax, though? Why is it not called a tax?
Well, it may be just tradition, but we, in economics terms, we do call it a tax.
How about...
But because it's important, to politically, it's especially important to focus on the fact that it's not on domestic producers. It's on foreign producers, and guess what? They don't vote.
So tariffs just on foreign goods.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different than a duty?
It's the same thing.
Duties and tariffs are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who can impose them, and on what?
Well, governments on either side can impose them. So we are talking now, or threatening, I should say, to impose tariffs on goods that are imported from China, Mexico, Canada. And the discussion of trade war is a concern that they would then turn around and impose tariffs on the goods that we export to them.
Okay.
And that's why they call it a trade war or a tariff war. And traditionally, in the past, that has, a lot of people argue that that brought about the Great Depression. So when trading stops, when both sides start bringing tariffs against each other, that slows down trade. And then, of course, as my students are taught to say, all prosperity comes from trade. So you cut trade, there goes your prosperity.
All right. So we'll look at the implications of that. But first, a little bit more on the explainers. Jacobus, what does it mean to have a trade surplus or a trade deficit?
So a trade surplus is when you export more than you import. A trade deficit is when you import more than you export. So the total amount of goods that cross the border, if we as the United States at this stage run significant trade deficits, which means we import much more goods than we export.
Okay, so is that a normal state of affairs?
Well, in the end, it's probably the best if it's equal for everybody. But trade is one component of how money or resources cross borders. Another one is capital. And so in the United States, foreigners will invest in the United States. So the capital comes into the United States. They even build sometimes factories in the United States. And then we export goods, or in other cases, we import goods. So the trade deficit or trade balance is not in principle a good thing or a bad thing. The question is, how do you finance that? If you continue to have a trade deficit, in other words, import more than you export, and you do not have some other way of offsetting that, such as capital flowing into the country, then you would increasingly have to borrow, or rather your reserves, which is the difference between what you earn by selling goods or get when others invest in your country, would go down. And that could put pressure on your currency.
We're getting a little beyond the third grade level for me. So I just want to walk it back for just a moment. Okay. And Christine, please jump in. I want you to, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Jacoba says. But let's walk through a trade agreement. Let's start with NAFTA. Do you want to walk us through that, Christine, or would you like to?
Well, I think that you're really an expert in that. You should. Okay.
Jacobus, how about it?
So NAFTA is a trade agreement between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Trade agreements are when countries agree to, instead of charging each other tariffs or taxing goods crossing borders, to reduce tariffs. In other words, they collaborate in some way in which they don't tax each other's goods as much as they may tariff other nations' goods.
Okay, so what would be an example of how that works
ground? In the case of NAFTA, we agreed that goods produced in Canada, Mexico, the United States will have less tariffs than goods produced outside of the trade area. And so the result is that we favor each other by doing more business with each other, by not taxing each other for goods that cross our borders. And that makes us stronger. And then the interesting thing is that why do we do this? Why did we create NAFTA? Because it creates a common market. It means that goods flow across these borders, it becomes a larger market. And that also attracts foreign companies to invest in that market in order to be part of that trade bloc. And so that's one of the they're not directly trade-related, but one of the benefits of creating a free trade area or agreement like NAFTA.
How about the TPP or the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
So that would be a different kind of agreement with a larger number of countries around the Pacific Rim included also, the TPP. These trade agreements can either be limited to just goods, certain goods, just goods between the nations, or they could be expanded to include services. They could be included to also provide mechanisms in which they will resolve disputes amongst each other. So the TPP was an agreement under negotiation that included a number of nations in the Pacific arena. Of course, the United States borders the Pacific. That would have created a similar kind of structure in which nations in the region that trade a lot of goods and services would all have reduced their tariffs on each other and therefore created a common market.
I wonder, can I pitch in here?
Of course.
I think that taking a really long-term historical perspective is a good way to understand this. When the country was founded, that was a time when there wasn't income tax came in my mother's lifetime. So we didn't have all government revenues came from tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole tax system was designed around taxing other countries' produce. So we started from there. And really, starting in the late 1890s, we started getting together and having these what we call trade rounds. And the two countries get together. It's important to understand how they do this. So we start from a place where everybody's got tariffs on everything. Then we get together and they say, okay, we're going to reduce our tariffs because all prosperity comes from trade. And so let's start. I'll drop this if you'll drop that. Now, it could be I'll drop scissors if you'll drop thread. I'll drop coal if you'll drop
steel.
Okay. So there's no logic to what is dropped. It's just political. So what I wanted to bring us to now is that now we have all these agreements in place that are multilateral. By the way, you mentioned common market. That's the euro.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
right,
that all
like
started.
That's the European Union
that's
functions.
That's it started, right. And then it became more of a political marriage. But so what we have is this structure of agreements and institutions that are built on a couple hundred years of tariffs randomly being taken off that don't make any sense for all kinds of reasons, don't make any sense anymore. And this is what I think the president is literally sort of calling a stop to all that and saying, this is crazy. It's really a historical artifact. Let's go back and revisit it all and see if we can make sense of it. And that's why when he said in Canada, my ears perked up. He said, oh, come on, guys, let's just all drop our tariffs. That's the clue. That's what he's really after.
So with me in the studio for a shame-free explanation of global economics at this moment, Christine Reese, you just heard from. She's a professor of economics at Georgia Tech. And Jacobus Bors, he's assistant dean for international engagement at Georgia State University's Business School. Okay, so let me pick up on that for just a second. So if one administration makes a trade agreement, are all future administrations bound to that agreement?
Until they're changed.
Until they're changed. Right. In what? Congress, executive branch? How did they get changed?
I think it ranges. So there are sections of a law, and you can apply. There's a huge trade negotiation, trade department that decides on this and works on it and does the economics of it. And so they can put tariffs on or off, and it usually happens through this big bureaucracy. And there are sections, and then you can go and look up section of the trade law and then see what items are under that. So today, when Jacobus and I we've been recently looking at this, we look at what items enter the section and what don't enter. Mm-hmm. So that's why the president can do this as an executive order.
So how are tariffs related to the price of things in the United States?
Well, if something is being imported and we put a tariff on it, let's say we put a tariff of 25%, interesting number, then that producer abroad, say it's a Chinese producer abroad, they are going to either have to raise their price 25% or take a 25% cut in profit, or cut profit, that amount. So we don't know what's going to happen until they make that decision. Now, if it's a good that's a real important good to us and we can't produce it and we can't get it anywhere else, we might just eat it and just go ahead and pay the 25%. And that way the government would get that tariff. The foreign producer would get their profit. And we would just pay higher prices, which would be a loss to consumers. But we're saying it's okay. On the other hand, if it's a good where there's a lot of international competition, or it's a good where we can substitute, or a good where we could sort of gear up our steel mills and make it ourselves, then we will end up enhancing local producers, domestic producers. They'll take over the business, and the foreign producer will be shoved out of the business, as is exactly what's happening in steel.
All right, let's talk about that on the local level, because, you know, Georgia consumers, Georgia businesses are looking at this. There's some reports of reading one here from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution of a man who owns an HVAC place in, Kennesaw. He said as soon as there were talks about tariffs, his prices raised. Things went up immediately. So Georgia produces quite a bit of chicken, includes chicken feet. What's happening to that particular product in this current trade climate? Jacobus.
At this stage, we've not seen tariffs on poultry. There is a potential that if the NAFTA negotiations do not go as we would like them to go, that Mexico may place tariffs on poultry, in which case they would tax any Georgia poultry that enters Mexico, which means the price of poultry in imported poultry would increase, which would give the Brazilian poultry producers an advantage. And that is the concern we have with poultry out of Georgia. In similar ways, the tariffs that we imposed on Chinese steel and other steel is resulting an increase of price of automobiles, somewhere close to $2,000 per vehicle. And that will be something that the consumer will have to absorb in the end. And so that's how the tariffs. So you used the example of chicken feet. So chicken feet is an interesting example. When we talk about trade, we typically say free trade is a good thing because we can specialize in the things we're good at, either where we have a lot of it, like labor in China, or we have special skills or do something very well, the refinement of manufacturing by the Japanese in the 80s. And so if you can do that really well, it gives you an advantage. The other nation, people will specialize, and that's how we would gain out of trade. So that's on the supply side. Well, the chicken feed is an interesting example of how trade increased as a result of demand side. We've had chickens and raised chickens in Georgia for a long time.
Right, for a long time, the chicken feet were just turned into pet food or whatever.
Correct. Because of trade and because of trade liberalization, we had access to the Chinese market. This is part of the WTO entry of China in 2001. And all of a sudden, poultry producers discovered that there's a huge appetite for chicken feet in China. And they started exporting their chicken feet. There are some times when chicken feet are more valuable than chicken wings, believe it or not. certain times of the year. Of course, right when football season starts, chicken wings become very, very valuable in
the
United States.
Supply and demand, right?
Supply and demand. But here's an example of how trade has allowed us to monetize or to make money of poultry business in ways that we before would not have been able to do, and trade made that possible.
Okay, so we've got just a minute left in this segment, but Christine, I wanted to ask you. You said, you know, threats of a trade war. We're going to have tariffs. What's the tipping point? What's the difference in these announcements and imposing trades?
Well, I think tariffs, that's rather a really important question to ask, and because all of the supposition we have about who's going to be hurt and who's going to be helped depends on, it assumes that the tariffs actually go into place and then the other side retaliates and so on. So it all assumes that. Well, if that doesn't happen, then we could get to a place where, as I suggested before, we could perhaps move to a place where we could get rid of all tariffs or get rid of more tariffs, or at the very least re-examine the structure that's there and put tariffs on the things that make sense and take them off of the things that don't make sense.
Well, in what world does that happen? Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely, it is. I think the big picture thing to recognize is the important power position of the United States. We are the global market. We are the world's market. If we stop buying from the rest of the world, they crash. So that's what President Trump is doing, is he's using our strength as the global market. We're the store. And if we don't open our doors to them, they can't sell anything. So we already see some examples of other countries backing off and giving in.
Trade wars, tariffs, and treaties. We've been breaking down some of the buzzwords in global economic news with my guest, Christine Rees, a professor of economics at Georgia Tech, and Jacobus Boris. He's assistant dean for international engagement at Georgia State University's Business School. And also with us now on the line is Will Harris. He owns White Oak Pastures in Bluffton, Georgia. Hello, Will.
Hello, Virginia. How are you this morning?
Very well. What do you farm there at White Oak Pastures?
Well, we raise grass-fed beef, pork, lamb, goat, and pastured poultry and vegetables. And I was very interested in your last segment. The Georgia Tech guest economics professor made the statement that all prosperity comes from trade.
And what do you think, Will?
I think that prosperity comes from fair trade. And unfortunately, all trade is not fair. As an example, currently, a consumer can walk into a grocery store or a restaurant and order grass-fed beef that is marked product of USA. And the truth is that animal may have been born, grown, slaughtered, and processed in Australia, New Zealand, Uruguay, or a number of other companies. But the consumer would logically believe it was product of USA because that's what the label says. And that's because of a misleading rule that USDA Food and Inspection Service has in place that makes it legal to do that. I think it's certainly misleading. Some would argue intentionally misleading. But it's an unfair trade practice.
Well, I want to give Christine a chance to respond to that. Christine?
That's so true. It's so absolutely true. And I'm a free market economist and have for years worshipped at the altar of free trade, as do Larry Kudlow and a lot of the president's advisors and Secretary Perdue. But it's absolutely true that it's got to be fair trade. And that's why I introduced earlier this idea of the history of it, that it's not that there's fair trade. It's not that it's free trade everywhere. In some cases, and especially in agriculture, the United States has very, very low tariffs in agriculture for goods coming in, where the countries surrounding us have very high tariffs. So there's a really big distinction in ag.
Well, Will, I want to ask you with just a minute left, what would you like to see the government do to make your job, that labeling, easier?
Well, in this particular instance, there's a number of things, but in this particular instance, I am the president of the American Grass-Fed Association, and we have filed a petition with USDA to change that rule, and from now until August 17th, they will be accepting comments from consumers on that, and if any of the listeners want to contact me, Will Harris at whiteoakpastures.com. I'll tell them how they can submit a comment to USDA to help change this horribly misleading rule.
Well, Will, thanks for your input there. And I know you want to get back out to the pasture. Will Harris, owner of White Oak Pastures in Bluffton, Georgia, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have to wrap up here. Thoughts on ongoing. Do you think this is a trade war that's going to happen? First to you, Christine. 30 seconds.
No, I don't think it is. I think, as we've already seen, indication in almost every day, somebody folds on the other side. And what we need to do is we're going to be changing all the rules and have the opportunity to go back and make the rules make sense economically, ideally moving to more and more free trade across more and more goods and commodities.
Jacobus, we've just got a minute.
I think that we will probably avert it. There's a lot at stake here. The challenge is for companies and investors that look at the trade and make investments in order to take advantage of producing one place or another. And if they are not sure they can plan accurately because they hear the noise, they get jittery. And that's where the problem comes.
Jacobus Forres, thank you very much. Christine Rees, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.